On today's College Football Inquirer, how something that happened in the world of college softball translates to college football. Who are the lightning rod players from the transfer portal who could be lightning rods on their new teams? Plus, Steve Sarkisian going full WWE, cutting promos on Ole Miss, on Texas Tech, on the Big 12. Who's next? All on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples. Ross Dellinger is traveling today. Godfrey, I don't know if Ross would have let us do this, and I probably should have texted the godfather of this show, Dan Wetzel, to see if this is okay. We're going to lead with softball today.
I mean, it's Memorial Day weekend. Mods are asleep. Post whatever you want.
Listen, first of all, softball's spicy as hell.
Dude, softball's where it's at right now. You think you're into college baseball. You want narrative and drama? You should have been watching college softball this weekend.
Exactly. Plus, it definitely translates to football because we're going to have some situations, at least one, would have been two, but I don't know if we're going to have the other one, in football this year where we might have something really similar to what happened in the Texas Tech Florida Super Regional. So for those who have not been following college softball... I imagine there are a few.
I'm only laughing because it contains a lot of non-soft. Like, Jason Williams is involved. Sorry,
I don't want to spoil anything.
Like, there's an NBA
white chocolate
short.
Makes an appearance in
that,
this thing.
That Jason Williams, white chocolate, is okay, sorry. Yeah, go.
Yes, okay. So, for those who don't know, Florida made the College World Series last year, had a very good team. One of the very good members of that very good team was a player named Mia Williams. Mia Williams is the daughter of former Florida basketball player Jason Williams and former Florida javelin thrower Danica Kiste. You know, good, legacy.
Good genes.
Yeah.
Good genes.
So came to Gainesville, just like mom and dad, following in the parents' footsteps. Great legacy. Well, this offseason, she did what, I think if you've been following college football, you know what a lot of people do. She transferred to Texas Tech.
At this point, we're all transferring to Texas Tech.
For the right amount.
Yeah. The Red Raiders are the leitmotif of today's show, by the way. So love them or hate them, they have created hashtag narrative. Go on, sir.
Yes, they are the connective thread. So Mia Williams transferred this past offseason to Texas Tech. And as the sports gods would have it,
yeah,
Texas Tech gets sent to Gainesville for a super regional. Texas Tech was the 11 seed. Florida was the 6 seed. So according to seeding, Florida's supposed to win this thing.
Right.
Florida did not win the thing. Texas Tech wins 2-1. They took the Friday and the Sunday. Mia Williams was beamed 5 times. Hit by pitch 5 times.
Five.
In 3 games.
Not once. Not, hey, welcome back. We're mad that you left for money. 5 times in a season-determining series. This is the postseason. Like, you don't, Andy, I don't know, you're not like a huge baseball fan, but you know, when you get to like the pennant or the World Series, you're usually not seeing guys get it intentionally beamed because there's so much on the line.
There's part of this. Mia Williams also jacked 2 home runs in this series. And if she hadn't been hit 5 times, she might have hit 5 home runs. Here's the reasoning Florida coach Tim Walton gave. And okay. I will buy some of this, not all of this.
All right.
She had a great weekend. She's got a hole on the inside corner of the plate. You have to throw it there. If you throw it on the outer plate, it goes over the fence. Nobody was trying to hit her on purpose. I don't understand the drama. That was really uncalled for. I'm very disappointed in that, but it had nothing to do with the softball game. Okay.
All right.
When you hit a person 5 times, there will be drama.
So there is this thing called a walk, right?
Yeah.
If you don't want to drill someone and put them on base, you could just walk them. If you feel like a significant portion of the strike zone is completely off limits, because of the power of the hitter, maybe walk
Barry Bonds was this person.
Exactly. Yeah. Just put them on base. Because that's where they're going to end up anyway after you plug them.
Yeah. So needless to say, a lot happened.
Yeah.
Okay, so dad, Jason Williams, escorted out of the stadium during the Friday game.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out wasn't his fault. A Florida fan hit his other daughter with a portable fan.
Oh, Lord.
Jason Williams allowed back into the stadium. The Florida fan ejected permanently.
Good.
At the end of the series, though, the teams don't shake hands. Jason Williams is mock gator chomping at the Florida fans.
His alma mater.
His alma mater, yeah.
Well, I mean, has that ever happened in the, like, can you recall in the history of college sports that you have a, like, a notable, a famous alum,
yeah,
mocking his alma mater after a game?
No.
I cannot.
Jim Harbaugh talking about general studies majors at Michigan when he coached at Stanford. That's as close as I can get.
That's about it. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm at a loss. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a long way of saying this is gonna happen in football too.
Yeah.
Like, now, I don't know about with the parents. There is one scenario where it could happen with a parent, by the way.
What you got?
Justice Haynes is gonna be the RB1 at Georgia Tech this year. That is Verron Haynes' kid. So,
Verron
Haynes, famous Georgia player, caught the hobnail boot.
Yep.
The pass in the hobnail boot game at Tennessee in 2001. Justice is his son. He's played at Alabama. He's played at Michigan. Now he's playing for Georgia Tech, the other side of clean old fashioned hate.
Okay. That could be really good, actually, when you think about the built up angst in the streak with Brent Key, mm-hmm, and his very specific and sort of like not hidden disdain for UGA. That'd be a good one. Don't know, yeah, not necessarily predicting that dad will be fighting in the stands necessarily, but.
Yeah, I doubt it probably because.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah. Listen, Jason Williams has always been a fairly volatile personality.
Yes. His peer group is Randy Moss. For those of you who don't know,
his best friend from high school.
They're from the same. They're from the same part of Southern West Virginia. So, also, I just used the phrase Southern West Virginia. So that's not just a descriptor of a location. That's also a personality archetype. Yeah.
But we are going to see this, and I think we're going to see this more and more as the way free agency works in college. And I'm actually surprised we haven't seen it a whole lot already.
Yeah,
because it's been 4 years of this now, but. We definitely would have seen it this year when Texas Tech went to Cincinnati because of Brendan Sorsby. We don't know if Brendan Sorsby is going to be playing for Texas Tech this year. I think the consensus is probably he winds up in the supplemental draft.
Right.
So we don't have that. We will see it when Darian Mensah plays against Duke at Miami. He's gone to Miami. Duke is traveling to Miami in November. That would be defending ACC champion Duke, by the way, that Darian Mensah helped them win. And they are playing at Miami. This is not a case where the coach left and the whole team turned over. This is a lot of guys who played with Darian Mensah,
mm-hmm,
who probably are a little pissed that he decided on the last day of portal season that he wanted to go to Miami. And oh, by the way, take leading receiver Cooper Barkay with him.
I want to get through this segment without mentioning LSU or Ole Miss. Can we make that a rule? Like, No. Because
Prince Will Umanmiela and TJ Daughtery, yes. I had them all lined up.
Okay, all right, we'll do them at the end then, because there's so much going on. Because I don't know if the casual fan understands, it's not just, hey, I played for Lane in Oxford and now I'm going to play for Lane in Baton Rouge, which is a normal migration. I'm starting to look at Group of Five previews. Mm-hmm. Just recorded a podcast on my other show with Bill Connolly, Fan of Mylan Show, and you know, you get those like, oh, 10 to 12 players went. Ole Miss has LSU players from last season because of Frank Wilson. So Frank Wilson left the LSU staff under Kelly and brought. So we are, in a lot of cases in that one rivalry, swapping helmets and guys have said stuff about each other. But this is, Andy, we had a precedent for this last season at the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. And I would say other than a really good football game, nothing happened. And that's Jackson Arnold, right?
Yes.
Remember Jackson Arnold?
I was there.
Yeah.
I was at the game.
Great game. Interesting dynamic, kind of felt like a bull.
Now Jackson Arnold did not leave Oklahoma on his own terms. It wasn't I was great at Oklahoma, right, and I'm leaving for Auburn. It was, they got John Materia, they don't need me anymore, so I'm going to Auburn.
All right, can I interest you? I was looking for last season, because really that's kind of where we have to start this. What about Earl Little for Florida State when they beat Alabama?
Yeah.
Right.
We mentioned one Umanmielen brother,
mm-hmm,
Princely Umanmielen. Left Florida for Ole Miss for the 2024 season. And yes, remember what happened.
Yes.
Ole Miss goes to Gainesville in November. All they've got to do is win that game and win the Egg Bowl, and they go to the playoff. They lose in Gainesville, and Princely Umanmielen has a crash out by the buses.
Oh, I forgot about that. Okay, yeah. So we can sit here and say, hey, well, okay, remember this, like Tiger Bachmeier. I've got a list here that I pulled up, but none of these have the kind of like, that was BYU Stanford, by the way. None of these have the kind of acrimony that I think, Andy, well, definitely not what happened this weekend in softball, but I think we're going to see more acrimony. I think we're going to see more like WWE-style drama on revenge games because, like, all right, let's go to Sorsby for a second, whether it happens or not. That's not the Jackson Arnold departure that you're talking about, right?
No, that is... Yeah. You were the engine of the team.
Yep.
You were the best player on the team.
By far.
And you left.
Yes. You were not, you did not lose out in a quarterback battle. I think we're going to see more of this. Mintz is another great candidate, right? You're Mintz a candidate. Yep. Hey, you see what I did there? Anytime you're recruiting teammates, I think we should build some rubric here. I would say press narrative that you left for more money. That's a requirement, right? That would satisfy Sorsby and Mensa. Right. Added bonus if you bring a teammate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cryptic social media posts and or quotes to press groups in either cities, right?
Yes.
What am I leaving out here?
Oh, I think we got to have the... you said cryptic social media posts. So we have the vague Instagram story
of course.
Covered.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much all you need. I think those are the key ingredients.
Look, number one is the key factor here because that's what drives the resentment and the anger. That's why Florida softball, I mean, look, regardless of whether or not they felt like they could deliver pitches on a particular part of the strike zone or whatever, look, they're plunking an ex-player that they thought was going to be a key component of their team, the daughter of alumni of two athletes from the Florida program. And also, there is like, maybe we add on a requirement, involves Texas Tech University. Because
I think that probably... ratchets it up because there are just lightning rod programs.
Yeah.
Notre Dame was always and still is a lightning rod program, but Texas Tech has become a lightning rod program.
Definitely. I think if you involve Lane Kiffin, that counts. If you involve, I mean, look, based on what's going on in the news, if you involve Pete Golding, right, just ask the folks in Clemson, that counts. So I think if you're going for either a program and or a head coach that is considered a scalper, that is that is going to fuel the anger of the spurned team. And that's what's going to bubble up, and then you're going to have incidents. Now, look, softball, fundamentally different sport than baseball. Than football. You're going to have contact in football, so I don't know if you're going to have as much of like the sort of anger and skirmishes that we saw this weekend.
Well, it's interesting because in baseball, even in college baseball, there would have been a fight.
Yeah, for sure.
On plunk number three, there would have been a fight. So maybe plunk number two. I actually turned on my TV on Saturday just in time to see plunk number four. And it was one of those, the thing is with the fast pitch softball, it moves in a different way than you're used to seeing if you're used to watching baseball.
Yeah.
So you got to, but in this case, you had the ball kind of tailing in on her, hitting her in the right elbow. She's a right-handed batter. She's in the batter's box. And now she makes no effort to get out of the way. In baseball, actually, you probably have to stay in the batter's box and don't get to take your base. In softball, if the ball is in the batter's box, you get a hit by pitch. In baseball, you have to make an effort to get out of the way.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's no effort made whatsoever to get out of the way, clearly because she knows what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably like, she understands their strategy because she knows they know her batting style. They know exactly where her favorite pitches are and where her favorite pitches aren't.
Have we mentioned, Andy, there's a dugout warning to Tech after one of Williams, what ends up being a game-winning home run or in the differential. Well,
okay, in game three, they gave a dugout warning to Tech when they celebrated lustily after a Williams home run. By the way, Texas Tech run-ruled Florida in game three.
Yeah, that's something we should also mention that. Florida's coach is ejected, and then Florida's players elect not to shake hands after the game.
Yeah.
This is, I'm just telling you, I'm not a softball historian by any measure. I can't remember something spilling out quite this acrimoniously. And I want to be very careful about how I say this because it's going to sound like I'm inciting like internet takery. I don't know if any of this happens without that Texas Tech element. It has nothing to do with the Red Raiders or their fan base or anything like that. I think there's a burgeoning resentment.
You mean if any team... not Texas Tech. If any team had done what Texas Tech has done athletic department wide, and with softball, you have to understand there's a pitcher named Nigeri Kennedy.
Yeah.
That they got last season biggest transfer portal addition anybody had, most expensive transfer portal addition anybody had. So Texas Tech has become known as the team that will go out and buy what it needs in the transfer portal.
Right. So what if this was another softball program in the SEC that played this weekend? I don't know if you would have seen this kind of vitriol from the Florida fan base. If it was Oklahoma or Alabama or Mississippi State, all of those teams played in the super regional this weekend from the SEC. It's not a league thing either. I'm just saying
it's not SEC Big 12 or anything like
that. Yes, not at all. If you know nothing about softball, I feel confident in telling you this. Texas Tech's persona and reputation at current in college football is the exact same in college softball. Mm-hmm. Exact same.
Yes.
It's the same fans being like, they're buying championships, they're trying to buy credibility, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's what
you
should
know. And they made it to the CWS final last year, by the way.
Yes. Red River basically dominates college softball right now. Oklahoma, Texas. There are other programs, but like if you need a cheat
sheet. Oklahoma is like Patty Gasso is Nick Saban.
Yeah.
In this, and it's probably actually more dominant than Nick Saban. If we
shout out to Mississippi really State, by the way, for breaking that. So Darian Mensah is probably the bet here.
Yes. Cause I can see like some echo of the whistle hits after he delivers the ball.
That's exactly where I was going. Also,
like that's with a quarterback, that's what you have.
We also have the two head coaches involved.
Yes.
So Mario Cristobal, Manny Diaz, I believe, I don't know if this is, apocryphal, Andy, you can fact check me. I believe Manny was mid recruiting visit when he was finally informed that he was actually dismissed as the Miami head coach.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. And basically the decision was, we're going to decide if we want to make the financial commitment that's going to take to get Mario.
Yeah.
And not just the commitment to him, but the commitment to the program in general. And we're not sure if we're going to do that. So we're going to keep Manny. We're going to string him along until we make that decision. And then they make the decision. So it's funny because I did a what if. I had a listener to my other show write in because we got into some sliding doors moments in college sports. And this person said, what if Florida State doesn't convert 4th-and-14 in the 2021 Miami game? Miami beats Florida State, ends the season on a 5-game winning streak. Looks like one of the best teams in the ACC at the end of that season. They might not fire Manny at that point.
Yeah, a simpler version of that is I've just had coaches who are, you know, probably complaining about the way Miami comports itself, saying, what have you really gained? If you look at the success that Duke has had, could you have not installed all of that around Manny and found similar success?
I that's what I wrote about is Duke, you know, clearly has done well in the NIL portal era. You look at the Elko era and the Diaz era.
Definitely.
Like Manny probably would have been, with the resources Mario has, Manny probably would have been doing something similar.
Yeah, no, this was very much a local politics story that gets into some families in Miami and people that did want to support Manny and did not. And Mario had kind of politicked for that job. I'm not going to say it was like an underhanded thing, but like everybody knew he always wanted to go home. And so we don't have to relitigate that. But what we can talk about is the fact that you will have a quarterback on the other side of the field that was playing for you who recruited his roster to defect. I don't think, like, you've spent time with Manny Diaz. I've spent time with Manny Diaz. He's not the guy who's going to say, hey, cheat a little bit after the whistle. He's not that coach.
No.
He's not that coach. But you don't need, honestly.
He understands the circumstances of this particular player. They stole him from Tulane.
Yeah.
From
so it's John Sumrall.
They're not being holier than thou about this.
Yeah, no, again, this is the point of the show where I like to point out to North Carolina fans, you could have John Sumrall and Darian Mensah under center this fall. Anyways, good luck with Belichick. I don't think that this is going to be something you have to tell the players about, because the Mensah thing is not so much about Manny versus Mario as it is those Duke players feeling like, okay, like you've made a value judgment on us as well.
Yeah, and we don't know how the season's, like, by then we'll know how the season's gone, basically. It's November when they're playing this game. So
yeah, that might be a good thing. I don't know if the ACC was conscious in its scheduling, but like or deliberate, I should say, by pushing that. But that's probably a good thing to let things maybe peter out a little bit.
Yeah, because there may be more drama that has overtaken it with either team, and then you don't have to worry about it. But it's going to be...
Duke's got to defend that conference championship, man.
They do. It's gonna be great. And there will be others, like you said, and it's the end of the segment, so we can now bring this up.
Yeah.
LSU Ole Miss is gonna be all of this.
Oh my God. I mean,
this is Lane Kiffin is Mia Williams times 20 million.
Here's the problem. The Florida fan that was ejected for throwing something at Jason's other daughter is everyone in this scenario. And what I mean by that, to be clear, is I expect the worst from every level, every component. There might, Andy, there might be fights inside of the suites at Vaught Hemingway Stadium in the M Club. I'm not kidding. Because you'll have LSU, you'll have certain LSU people. There's a lot of family connections here.
Well, and you also have, these are the two, probably the two best tailgating fan bases,
I would argue,
in the country.
I mean, yeah, I'm biased, but yes.
And they're like, the LSU crowd rolls deep when they come on the road. Like,
yeah.
What my welcome to the SEC moment was my freshman year at Florida, looking out my dorm window on a Wednesday and seeing the LSU RVs rolling in.
My wife's family all graduated from LSU. She went to the University of Mississippi, and the weekend that we sort of officially started dating was an LSU Ole Miss weekend. And when I met her for like a casual drink, like getting set up on the date, I think she had 17 family members in her two-bed apartment for the weekend. So yeah, it's more of an invading horde than it is like a extended family. Yeah. Think Mongols.
It's going to be incredible. It's going to be incredible. And the WWE aspects of it are so much fun, which is why when we come back, I want to talk about a coach in college football who seems to be embracing
Andy,
his inner Stone Cold Steve Austin.
He's cutting promos.
We speak, of course, of Steve Sarkisian at Texas. We'll talk about Sark and Vince McMahon when we come back. We're back at the College Football Inquirer. We're just talking about the WWE aspects of college sports in general in the transfer portal NIL era, because we had a meaty discussion of softball just now. First time in the history of this show that's happened. But in college football, you've got a coach who, I wrote this last week, I guess I tweeted this. Remember Steve Buscemi in Billy Madison?
Oh, yeah.
He has his people.
He's got the list. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right before he puts on the lipstick, he's got the hunting rifle. Yeah. It's a great scene.
I am wondering if Steve Sarkisian has one of these lists, because
why? Why is he so
bad? In the last few weeks, he has gone at Ole Miss over basket weaving.
Which he has. I don't even know if have they played each other in the Sark era? I don't.
They haven't. They're scheduled to play each other this year.
Yeah. Like, what? Why are you mad at them? Anyway, sorry, keep going.
Well, he explained. We'll talk about that in a second. But he's at the Touchdown Club of Houston last week, and this is from our friend Anwar Richardson. He gets asked if there's any way to factor in strength of schedule in their decision-making. Sark says there's a team in this state, Texas being the state, that plays in another conference that if he played his twos and threes, his team would go undefeated and they'd make the playoffs this year. So
okay,
this is a shot at Texas Tech, but more at the Big 12. This Texas fans who are like, no, he's not taking a shot at Texas Tech. He's taking a shot at the Big 12. Oh, no, no. It can be both.
He's going after Baylor. Get real. Yeah. Okay, two quick things before we get into the fun part. One, I want to acknowledge the hypocrisy of sports journalism because we're about to pick apart Sark. Thank you, Steve Sarkisian, on behalf of myself and Andy.
We love you. Please keep doing this.
It is May 25th as we record this. Ain't much going on. So I appreciate you. Thank you for your service. Number two, Sark, I have one question before we go any further. Why do you think that about the Big 12 schedule? Could it be that two major programs, yours included, left the Big 12? Is that possible? That was the one thing, Andy, that no one brought up in this
skirmish. You could have had that easy schedule. You chose what you got.
You could have been in the Big 12 beating up Texas. Like, I have to point that out because a lot of really angry Big 12 fans pointed out, like, your slight, you left us and Oklahoma, and then turned around and said, we have a negative reputation for strength of schedule, which really is twisting the knife. Now, let's talk about promos. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your On3 co-host, Ari Wasserman, he put out a column, my days are a little fuzzy. Is it Thursday?
Whenever it happened.
Whenever it happened,
Thursday, yeah.
He put out a column, and I should have had this pulled up beforehand, basically saying, hey, Texas is talking about Texas Tech. And that's a win for Texas Tech, right? That was the gist of what Ari was saying, was like, hey, we just did a first segment on Texas Tech softball. So clearly something's going on here where the Red Raiders are commanding narrative. How many times am I going to say narrative in this episode? I don't know. All right. Nothing wrong with that. I'm not making a value judgment one way or the other. I retweeted Ari and said something to the effect of like, when I worked in professional wrestling, which if you're new here, I worked in professional wrestling for almost 5 years. This is the only way we measured success was attention. And Ari was like, I don't know if he's being like, talking about me, like, I don't know if he's being honest or if he's like being glib or like whatever, but no. I'm completely being honest here. That's the only way that we ever looked at whether or not, here, I said, this is exactly how we measured success when I worked in pro wrestling, okay? And Ari said, do you want proof of Texas Tech's growth? Other coaches like Steve Sarkisian are thinking about the Red Raiders. I messed with Ari a little bit on Twitter, being like, you know, kind of like batting it around. No, I'm being dead honest, Andy. So when we would sit in booking meetings, I worked for a company called Total Nonstop Action Wrestling. Figure out that acronym. Look, marketing in the aughts was a different thing. We've changed a lot as a society. We're talking about 20 years, by the way. I took that job 2 months from now, 20 years ago. So it's been a very long time. I did a little bit of everything. I did work on some booking, marketing, learned how to write segments, did all this stuff. Okay, a lot of public relations. Andy, are you familiar with a WWE tag team called the New Age Outlaws?
No.
Okay, Road Dogg and Billy Gunn.
I stopped watching wrestling when I turned 15.
So. Okay, there was a tag team. Do you know what D-Generation X is?
I do. Okay. I do, because I the 1-2-3 Kid,
yes,
who was a member of D-Generation X, was a jobber, I believe, who won a Monday Night Raw match right before I stopped watching, yes.
Okay. You are also from the cradle of professional wrestling in that particular sort of
I-4. In Florida, yes. I used to work out at gyms that,
okay.
The stars of professional wrestling would occasionally frequent. Yeah.
The I-4 arm of Florida is essentially the, I don't know why, it's the habitat and resting place of professional wrestling. So there was this, I got to do this fast, all right? So there was this group in the WWE in the 90s called D-Generation X. It was like Shawn Michaels and Triple H, and then these two guys who were a tag team, the Road Dogg and Billy Gunn, okay? And they were the New Age Outlaws, and they would do like, they would yell like, suck it, and do all this like wild stuff, okay? Flash forward from the 90s, about 10 years in the aughts. Andy, I'm working for the number two. I'm working for the Pepsi. Some might even say the RC Cola behind Coke. All right? Okay. We're really tiny. We're on Spike TV. We're doing about 1 million viewers on a Thursday night, which in the aughts was considered decent but not great. If you had 1 million viewers on any cable network right now, we'd be having helicopter fights, okay?
Yeah.
But at the time, we were trying to get more to like the 2-2.5 million range. And at the time, Monday Night Raw on Thursdays was doing anywhere from a 3.5 to a 4.2, which basically means, like, I hate talking about TV ratings because they're so subjective, but like about, let's just say we were doing a quarter of their audience, okay? And on a fraction of the budget, and then you have mighty Vince McMahon. So what Vince McMahon learned fighting WCW in the 90s was that anything you, and I'm going to sound a little bit like Confucius or like the Art of War or one of these people, like anything you put your energy on, you're giving energy to. And what I mean by that is that very famously, the WWE, then the WWF fought WCW. But if you know your pro wrestling history, what happened was that WCW started spending money like Texas Tech. This all has a point, all right? Acquired Hulk Hogan, acquired Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, all of these wrestlers started coming over. But WWF was the first entity that actually recognized this and talked about it on their programming, kind of assailing WCW. You can't buy our product. You can't buy this. You can't buy that. Right. So they blinked. They talked about it first. Andy, the next thing that happened is for the better part of 3 years, WCW became the most dominant brand in professional wrestling for the first time.
Monday Nitro.
Yes. So for the first time since WWF became a fully nationalized promotion in the early 70s, they were now the number two. So as the number two around, this is around 2006, 2007, we decided we were going to try and make Vince McMahon blink. And so we used these two wrestlers and we changed their entire gimmick and we called them the Voodoo Kin Mafia. Well, what the hell does that mean? It means nothing. Except if you know wrestling, you know that VKM, those are the initials of Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Now, the Road Dogg and Billy Gunn were best friends with Paul Levesque, who is Triple H, and Shawn Michaels, who at the time were still major A-list headliners for WWE. Triple H now runs the company, by the way, now in 2026, okay? We would cut promos. We would write these segments. We took it wasn't technically a tank. It was like an armored military vehicle to Stamford, Connecticut, and shot a segment the parking lot away from WWE. So we wouldn't, so like they couldn't call the cops on us, right?
Right.
We started going to their events and standing just outside. I personally organized a viral team, like with a television crew and like a viral marketing team in your backyard in Orlando at what is now Camping World Stadium when they held WrestleMania there. We leaked spoilers to the press that Chris Jericho had signed with WWE instead of us. I was responsible for that. There's a term for that that Nixon coined, but I'm not going to use it. We did all this stuff.
Starts with rat and rhymes with
you got it.
Smucking.
Rat coitus. Okay. So we kept doing this. Guess what, Andy? It bombed. At one point, Andy, our parent company, which was an energy company in Texas that I'm sure doesn't want to be named right now because they're still active.
Oh, they exist? It's not everyone? Oh,
buddy.
Okay, good.
That's a family saga. Taylor Sheridan should make a show about that. Anyway, we actually got $1 million, like physically, and we put it in the ring and we challenged them to accept a tag team match with us. Shawn Michaels and Triple H versus our guys, the Voodoo Ken Mafia, who used to be their best friends in real life. Shoot. Guess who never blinked? Guess who never responded? Guess who let it die completely? The WWE.
Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
Yeah. They never once acknowledged us because what in the world did a wrestling promotion so big that it's on the New York Stock Exchange have to gain by fighting with this tiny promotion based in Nashville, Tennessee, who was on Spike TV, who was basically a glorified lead-in to Dana White's reality shows on Thursday night. What did we have to... We had everything to gain, and they had absolutely everything to lose, right? If you want to take it to college football for a second, this is a scheduling philosophy when like major legacy institutions be like, we're not going to play directional state U because God forbid we lose, right? They're gonna take
that... This is exactly what the Texas fans said when I said, you've cut the promos, now book the match.
So...
When Cody Campbell fired back at Sark, and I said... Book the match.
My message to Cody Campbell, to Joey Maguire, to the powers that be, that SID staff, I've talked with them before, they're all good people, at Texas Tech is, it's working. I have no partisanship in this, but what I'm telling you is this. We just did a segment on your softball team. Now I'm doing a segment comparing you guys to professional wrestling. I know that's not maybe the classiest sort of descriptor you're looking for, but I'm telling you right now, if Steve Sarkisian is venting and complaining about the state of the playoff, but only invoking you, you've won. Also, Andy, Texas Tech's twos and threes would not win the Big 12 undefeated. I just wanted to throw that out there.
He's saying Texas's twos and threes would win the Big 12 undefeated.
Okay, I wanted to be clear on that, because when you read it out loud, it sounded like he was talking about Texas Tech.
It's also not true.
No, now, it's not.
Alabama's none of those twos teams and threes in 2012 could have won a lot of leagues.
Absolutely.
But the world has changed.
Beating the Jaguars, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a success. Because guess what? Texas Tech, all they have to do is win the Big 12 to go back to the playoff. Texas's plight is Texas's responsibility. As we mentioned at the beginning of this segment, right? The Longhorns decided to go to the SEC. I don't remember the SEC coming in by force and annexing anybody. All right? There was no ground invasion.
That didn't work well the last time somebody tried to do that in the Republic of Texas. So.
No, sir. Not at all. So the Texas specifically and willingly, after years, by the way, of... Andy, you're old enough to remember this, and I am too. Texas fans were notorious for assailing the quality of the SEC.
Yes.
We don't need the SEC. We're better than the SEC.
Yeah.
And now they're complaining, it's so hard. Texas Tech has it easier. If I am Cody Campbell, who is sort of thought to be the maestro of all of this, I'm taking this as great news. It's awesome. And yes, by the way, the simplest thing to do is say, hey, let's go one-off in Jerry World or Houston. Let's do a one-off in 2027-28.
Texas has
everything
no
to lose.
To do that.
Yeah, but Texas opened their mouth, Andy. And to go back to that WCW thing, WWE couldn't stop talking as they were losing, and then they kept losing. They kept losing.
Yeah. Now, the thing, look, Texas, like, I'm not going to kill them too much because not only do they have a decently hard, I mean, they have a hard SEC schedule. They're also playing Ohio State this year. They also have Notre Dame scheduled in the future. Like, they are doing what we would like schools to do. In their schedule.
Absolutely.
You know who isn't? Texas Tech. And so you can say, we need Texas or A&M to play us. Okay, no, just go schedule a power conference team. You don't have any in your non-conference. You played Oregon a few years ago. That was good.
Yes.
It's so go schedule a power conference team. And then let's talk about that.
By the way, it's not any better next year. It's
nope.
Arkansas, Pine Bluff, New Mexico, and then they go into conference play. Yeah. They've got one buried, it looks like they haven't even signed one yet. So I guess they do have a gap. But some of this, a minor amount of this, I will ascribe to the uncertainty of everything that's gone on in college sports the last couple of years. You've seen scheduling hiccups. You've seen series canceled. That does not apply here. Texas Tech, this is a key missing
strategy.
Yeah, but it's a missing component. Because the other problem here is that what if you get knocked out? What if you're upset in week three this year against Houston? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
What if for some reason you have two losses? Let's just say you lose the season finale to TCU. And by some scheduling quirk, that easy peasy Big 12 that everyone's making fun of, you're the third team. You're the one that's looking out. And then you're trying to clamor for an at-large bid in a 12-team format. It would really help if you even had, do you remember the phrase scheduling intent? If you even had some scheduling intent. But right now, the intent here was
to... That would be Oregon, Oklahoma State last year. Like they intended to schedule a good non-conference opponent, and what showed up wasn't.
Yeah, which by the way, until we can shorten the window on scheduling series, I'm fine with scheduling intent as a considerable factor. I don't know how you feel about it.
No, I just shorten the window. We had some nostalgia last week. When I was saying book the match, we had some nostalgia for the BYU-Coastal Carolina game that came together in 3 days.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah.
Guys, you can do it.
Oh, God, yeah.
You can leave spaces in your schedule open and do this. Oh, by the way, if you want to leave one space open and not worry about your venue, there are cities now throwing money at people for power conference, non-conference one-offs. So you can do it.
There's a stadium 2.5 miles from this microphone that I can tell you for certain, Lubbock, would welcome you at any time to schedule a game as soon as it's done next year. Nashville would pay you handsomely to fly to this city Labor Day weekend or maybe the week after and play someone from the SEC or ACC.
Orlando's been dumping money into Camping World Stadium because the Jags are going to play there while their stadium is being renovated. Mm-hmm. They want events...
Yeah.
After that.
Yeah.
So
I mean, we can name 5 or 6 cities right now that would cut them a check for if whenever there's a gap, and they'll go out and they'll do the work to find the opponent.
Yeah. So I have a hard time just crushing Sark for this, but here's what I want to say to Sark.
Okay.
And we said it at the beginning. We love you for this.
Oh yeah. Thank you.
I want you to keep this up.
Yeah.
Keep this energy up.
Yes.
Whoever you got next on your list, bring it out. Okay. So as soon as I finish recording this, I am headed to Destin for SEC spring meetings. We're going to talk about SEC spring meetings in the next segment. I want you to take aim at someone else while you're there.
Ooh, can we book it?
Maybe. Because, well, here's the thing. If you pick somebody else in the SEC, you have to sit in a room with the person.
I mean, well, he's already done that with Ole Miss.
I mentioned I was going to explain the Ole Miss thing.
Yeah.
So, Lane Kiffin and Pete Golding are Sark. This is your Billy Gunn, Shawn Michaels.
Okay.
Triple H thing.
Gotcha. Like
they're best buddies.
Okay.
Those are his best buddies in SEC coaching land. And therefore, that's why he picked their school. I know it's not Lane school anymore, but it was.
Right.
So that's why he went.
Yeah. Yeah. The Saban alumni have become, I think, weirdly chummier than even probably Saban would have predicted.
I think it's sort of a shared
drama.
Misery.
Drama.
Yeah.
All right. So I tell you what, he's not going to shoot anything across the bow of Kirby.
No.
He's not going.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Little behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Do you think nobody's going to take a shot at Kirby because they're afraid Kirby would actually literally whip their ass?
Fight them? Yes. Are we getting into who's going to win in the room again?
Well, we know it's Mario and we know it's.
Well, no, Kirby. Not in Destin. In Destin.
Yeah. But Kirby's the only former All-SEC player in the room.
I also think that Kirby's...
John Sumrall played in the SEC and was pretty good, but...
I mean, Kirby's the dean.
Yeah.
Kirby's the actual dean. I don't know if he's the dean, like, mathematically, Andy, but he's the dean.
Yeah.
And he's even... I'm not saying he doesn't talk. He does. But he's very... He's much more measured, and he's the most Saban-esque about this stuff, where he doesn't... If he pops off in any public setting, it's a calculated maneuver. That's right. One of the things he learned from the old boss that some of the other subordinates did not.
I believe last year was where he, at SEC spring meetings, where he said no crying from the yacht, which is maybe my favorite Kirby Smart quote.
I mean, honestly, it sounds like, it does sound like a badass rap album name. No crying from the yacht. That's right. Pretty tight. It's pretty tight. So I know he's not going to mess with Kirby. The other thing about this too is that Sark is not punching down because, yes, by the way, Ole Miss alumni got kicked out twice, 1.96 GPA. It's not that great a degree. Texas is a much better degree. That's fine. But that's not punching down because Ole Miss was in the Final Four last year, okay?
Yeah.
So he's not going to come in and like mess with a brand new coach, John Sumrall, or brand new coach, Will Stein.
A bad Florida team beat them last year, so you got to be careful with
that. I'm trying to narrow down who he's going to go after in the room. Like, he's not going to...
Kalen DeBoer? They made the playoff.
That's so hard. Okay, here's the problem in the wrestling booking sense, Andy.
Yeah.
Kalen is, he's such a flat baby face.
It's too nice.
That's what I'm saying. He's such a flat baby face. It's really hard to get. I mean, look, if I'm in the room.
I mean, in a perfect world, it's Venables. He ain't doing that.
No, in a perfect world. The problem is the timing's not ready and we haven't given
Venables is WrestleMania. Sorry. We're booking Monday Night Raw.
This is what I learned sitting. This is my job as a young man was to sit in a room and learn at the feet of Dirty Dutch Mantel. The problem is this. It's a rookie head coach, but let me tell you something. We love him in developmental. He's had some great matches. He's had some fantastic mic work. His ring presence is fantastic. Do you know where I'm going with this?
Will Stein?
The Mad Russian. Alex Golish.
Oh,
problem
Alex
is,
Golish, yes.
Golish is a little too green in the SEC. You've just put him on the main card. Like, you've just put him on Monday Night Raw. Golish needs about a year of seasoning. And then I would in fact, Andy, I'm going to go ahead and make a prediction here. A year from now, if we're sitting here in front of these microphones, we are going to be talking about someone who has been rubbed the wrong way by Mr. Alex Golish. Ask Tom Herman.
Well, he keeps the chemical symbol for iron behind his desk in a frame.
Let me tell you something, man. Yeah, that's effing something. I have so much respect for that.
FE stands for F everyone.
I know. But like, that's effing something. Dude, it is so hard for me. I'm not in the coach profile writing business anymore. I don't do those jobs for people anymore. I don't put anybody over. There are plenty of working media who do that. It's hard not to gush about the... Like, I think I really like Alex Golish. I think it's going to be really good
for
college
football. Well, here's the thing.
Football.
I think Alex Golish and John Sumrall, certainly. I don't know about Will Stein yet, but maybe.
Oh, is Sumrall winning the fight?
Well, I don't know if he's winning the fight. But
no,
he will mix
fight.
It up.
You know,
he will mix it up in here. He will take shots.
John's my age. Kirby's a few years older.
Yeah, they're only about 5 years difference.
I think Sumrall might clear the room. If it's a destined boardroom street fight, Monday Night Raw, right? Like, I think Sumrall might clear the room. I'm gonna get
maybe.
Dude, you and I are gonna get so many texts about this.
When I talk to these guys this week, I will ask.
I tell you what,
I'll just pull them aside. Sumrall will have thoughts on this.
If it's a battle royal. So you have to go over the top rope. I'm going Elko.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you that he's got a base. He's got a base. Elko's not going over that rope.
All right. We've already started the next block. So let's take a break. When we come back, we'll preview SEC meetings, the battle royal part of it, and the actual conversations that will be had. We'll
chair talk about shots. When we come back. Chair shots.
We are back at the College Football Inquirer. We were talking about the SEC spring meetings. That's where I will be as soon as I finish recording this show. Ross and I will both be there. We'll have a good update from it on Thursday. They won't be over yet when we record the show on Thursday, but they will be wrapping up. The coaches will have come and gone. The private jets will have taken off from the Redneck Riviera at that point. But Godfrey, we talked about who wins the theoretical battle royal. If it were to break out in these meetings, but they are going to talk about some actual stuff at the SEC spring meetings. The playoff is the thing that I think is going to get the most attention because it's the thing that everybody can wrap their brains around. Like, it's hard to wrap your brain around if the SEC were to go it on its own governance wise and the CSC and all that stuff. It's very easy to wrap your brain around. The SEC likes a 16-team playoff, the SEC's commissioner likes a 16-team playoff.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else wants a 24-team playoff. And included in the everybody else, Godfrey, are all of the SEC's coaches, or most of the SEC's coaches, and a lot of the SEC's ADs. Like, we did an anonymous survey at On3 of the SEC athletic directors. It was not unanimous that they wanted 24. There were guys, there were people who wanted 16.
Yeah.
But it's more people who want 24.
Yes. And again, to simplify this, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, the reasoning behind this push is that it's self-preservation for athletic directors and head coaches. How recently Correct. Have I made the playoff?
And the reasoning, so the you know having discussed this with them, and then also with the people at the ACC meetings a couple of weeks ago, the reasoning behind it, if you're an AD, is I am being told I got to dump all this money into roster. I got to raise all this money and then dump it into roster, which I'm not getting back. At least when I make the locker room waterfalls back in the day, I had a waterfall to show for it. I need something to show for this. I need a number I can, a year I can put on a banner to show for this. And it's interesting because I was thinking about this today, Godfrey. I think Indiana's really messed it up for everybody.
Oh, considerably so.
Because if you are Minnesota, Purdue, Mississippi State, Arkansas, all these schools, before you could say, listen, the world is set up for the Ohio States and the Georgias and the Alabamas. It is not set up for us.
Yeah.
But then Indiana goes and wins the freaking national title.
Yeah.
And they show you that if you spend your money wisely, and they did not spend it lavishly.
No.
Despite what your stupidest friend might think. They were probably in the 20s in terms of roster spend last year. So, and I mean 20 in the 20s in millions and in the 20s in ranking. But now, if you are all of the schools I just mentioned, and there's quite a few more who fall into that bucket, if they can do it, why can't you do it?
Correct. The problem is, why not us has expanded beyond reason. Why not us? Maybe towards the middle of the 4-team playoff era had really calcified, I think, into a reasonable umbrella. You had some programs where their reach exceeded their grasp, right?
But the thing is, like Texas,
but not that many.
Texas A&M, Oregon, we're not talking about them. They have the means and always had the means.
I was including them. I mean, yeah. Oregon was in the first playoff national title game.
Yeah,
they didn't win,
yeah.
But yeah, like A&M has had the funds for years. I mean, if it's funny because you bring up like the Mississippi States of the world or why not Purdue or whatever. It's more like, God, what a referendum on A&M, right? We took a fraction
right,
of the money.
But the thing is, they've always had the money. They can spend like this. That's
yes.
They're in a different place than the ones we're talking about.
But it's a mismanagement of those funds. I think that's the biggest
Correct.
Thing. So, yeah. I like this theory a lot. It's yet more fuel for 24. The problem is, I have shrugged thus far at 24, but if this is the prevailing logic, Andy, you know the next thing that's going to happen is 26 and 28. And
well, that's the thing. My thing about this, it doesn't matter how big you make the number.
Yeah.
You won't be satisfied.
No. Basketball taught us that. We found the perfect number and we broke it. We broke it again. We just really broke it again. I mean, even 68 felt tiresome to me. Dayton was always a burden, I thought. But
right
now it's a much bigger burden. So there will never be a satisfying number. I don't know if we want to make this entire destined. Let me before I go on another tangent. Is there anything else that will come from Destin that is not playoff size oriented that's worth noting?
I want to know. This is the question I want to ask. I don't know. Not so much the coaches because I know how they feel about it. They don't. All the coaches want is you tell me what my parameters are and I will execute.
Right.
That's how coaches feel, think, operate. I want to know from the ADs, and some of these ADs were very passionate about the creation of the CSC, and others were not. Others were very cynical about it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know from the ones who were passionate about it, who have been proven hilariously wrong. What do you want to do now?
Isn't the inevitable answer that they would have to take on some responsibility? In other words,
well,
like
the thing is,
wasn't the CSC always just like, hey, we need another straw man?
The Big Ten was like, well, we need you to raise the cap. The answer is not raise the cap.
Okay.
No matter what arbitrary number you put on the cap, someone's going to want to go over the cap.
This is correct, yes.
And you're not doing the things to allow you to legally have a cap. So just don't have a cap. Let the market sort itself out. I'm gonna go Dan Wetzel here. Is the game suffering that much?
No.
It sure doesn't look like it.
So this goes back to that bucket, and it's usually Ross who's kind of dragging. I mean, that's Ross's job. I'm not saying this against Ross. Ross is always dragging in the latest quote or the latest piece of news from these individuals who see the obvious choice and can't make it or even speak to it because of some pre-existing contractual obligation. I think, Andy, what you're pushing towards is if we had prominent ADs speak up and say, it's not about the number. If anything, we should let the market sort itself out. What you're doing is opening the door to breaking apart conference affiliation as we know it.
Because which is going to happen.
Yes, which we know. Yes, I made a whole mini-series out of called Who Killed College Football. Like, we wrote 85,000 words and put it into a podcast about how this history has never been concrete. It's always been in flux. And two, it inevitably is going to change because that's what the sport does. So even if... Maybe if I'm like a Greg Byrne, I feel confident enough in the equity that my institution holds that I could
this
be that
Alabama
flippant.
Is athletic director.
Sorry, yeah, Alabama. Like if I'm Alabama, if I'm Chris Del Conte, I don't really think that's his style right now.
Texas,
yeah. Right? Texas, maybe. If I am truly one of the haves, maybe I pop off. But what is the short-term ramification for that? Because what we haven't seen and what we don't know of, unless you can inform me otherwise, is do you draw the ire behind closed doors of Greg Sankey? One of the things, I've got one for you, by the way, that I'm looking for this week. Is there any indication that Greg Sankey is going to shut those doors on day one and bring up a variety of things that are going on? Be it Lane Kiffin talking about Ole Miss's racism on Front Street or basket weaving or all of this sniping and say, this stops now. Is he going to have a Mike Slive gangster moment?
I would not be surprised if that happened. Not at all. So as we're recording this, peek behind the curtain. We're recording on Monday so I can travel. The meetings start on Tuesday after our usual recording time. So it will be probably Tuesday afternoon when Greg Sankey walks in with the football coaches. And then they'll also meet up with the ADs on Wednesday and the commissioner. Tuesday afternoon sometime is probably where that speech happens. And I would imagine it does. What I'm actually a little more intrigued by on the Greg Sankey front, and we've talked about this a few times on the show, is there have not been a lot of times in his tenure as the commissioner where he's had so many of his own constituents verbally going against him.
Yeah.
Outwardly, publicly going against him. And that is...
You're talking about in the playoff realm, right?
In the playoff realm, but I think the... I don't know exactly where everybody falls on the CSC, you know, rev share on the number. That's another thing I want to find out. Where does everybody fall? Where is Sankey on this? Where are the presidents on this? Where are the ADs on this? And I know the ADs all have different opinions.
Yeah, but it depends on their boosters.
Yeah. Because Sankey is at his core a pragmatist.
Okay, keep
and
going.
So will probably be will if most of them say, hey, we want to raise the cap or go uncapped, he can live with that because that leans into the SEC's advantages all over all the other conferences with the exception of the Big Ten.
Yes, I do think his self-preservation instinct is stronger than most because that's how you get to a position like commissioner of the SEC. So I do feel like if there's a quorum underneath him that becomes a consensus, he's not going to fight that because then he'll find himself in a corner very quickly. He does not want the majority of his stakeholders agreeing with Tony Petitti against him. That's a fast recipe for a bad, bad product if you're Greg Sankey.
And that's why with the playoff thing, I'm very curious to hear what he says. I would like personally for him to take a very hard line and muck this thing up for as long as he can to keep it at 12. Because I like 12. I think 12 is a good number.
Yeah.
I would enjoy watching 12 for a few more years. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think if it's possible for the SEC to be made whole for the loss of its championship game, then you can probably get everybody in the SEC on your side.
If Media Day started tomorrow, I would be halfway tempted to attend. And I haven't gone to a Media Days in...
Well, it's in Tampa. You could go to the Lifestyle Family Fitness and visit with some of your favorite wrestler friends.
Thank you, Chamber of Commerce. I would be halfway tempted to attend because you have this one much more important lane that you're discussing, which is a combination of the playoff size and the CSC, because that's going to determine the future of the sport. But what I find interesting, maybe because I like to be a little bit of a heel, you know, the SEC trots out a lot of pablum every year. Scholar athletes, blah, blah, blah. We're doing this off the field. This is about academics. In the last 30 days, you've had a shot at academics from one coach to another program. You've also had the same program.
By the way, shout out to our guy, Matt Stahl, again.
He's the best.
Who called an actual basket weaver to determine how difficult. Sounds really difficult.
Yes. Yes. Young Matt Stahl. He said I could say that. He said that you were stealing his youth by not.
Georgia grad, by the way. The basket weaver was a Georgia grad.
Was he really? That's great.
Yeah.
I hope that was the Hope Scholarship. Okay. Sorry. We've also had accusations from one charter, the head coach of a charter member of the SEC against another charter member of the SEC that, hey, you are essentially, your brand is essentially racist and makes black families uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And then on down the list. The mask is kind of slipping in the marketing sense of the SEC. The unification and the...
Well, you know what made the mask slip?
Yeah, I do.
Not having a team play for the national title for the last three seasons.
A particular head coach saying, hey, I'm going to go enjoy a glass of beer before I gear up and beat your ass again at Indiana. All things go back to Indiana. Go Hoosier. I welcome our new overlords.
Indiana's screwing it up for the whole sport. Yep.
I welcome our new Hoosier overlords. Thank you so much for having us. I surrender.
So when next we convene on Thursday, Ross and I will be in Destin. We will have answers to some of these questions. We will also know if there was any drama in the rooms.